This is a production of Cornell University.
Welcome back to our first meeting. It is 4:31 p.m. on Tuesday, February 16th. I'm going to show you all my gavel and officially call the meeting to order. So before we get started, I am going to quickly read our land acknowledgement, if that's all right, and then Casey will take attendance and then we'll move forward. So Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Goyagano, the Cayuga Nation. The Goyagano are members of the Haudenosaunee, I've been practicing but still not great, I'm trying, Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Goyagano disposition and honor the ongoing connection of Goyagano people, past and present, to these lands and waters. So thank you all for listening. I'm going to admit to more people. And yes, I'm going to start with calling for any late additions to our agenda.
Should I...
I'm sorry. Yes. Thank you, Casey. Okay. I completely forgot that I just said that. A roll call would be excellent. Thank you.
Awesome. Valerie Amer?
Present.
Uche Chukwukere? Uche?
Present.
Awesome. Hehe Depew? Hehe Depew? Cody Duell?
Present.
David Dunham?
Present.
Jacob Feit?
Present.
Brandon Fortenberry?
Present.
Thomas Fox?
Present.
David Heiner?
Present.
Alex Hong?
Present.
Robert Howarth?
Present.
Catherine Huang? Logan Kenny?
Present.
Caroline Levine?
Here.
Jeff P?
Present.
Bennett Scher? Lucas Smith?
Present.
Charles Van Loan?
Present.
Pillard Thompson?
Here.
Jessica Withers?
Here.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Casey. And it looks like, unless I'm mistaken, we have a quorum by quite a bit. So now I'm going to call for late additions to the agenda, if anyone has any. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to keep moving forward. So for business of the day, the only minute approval that we have here is for the December 8th minutes, and we have access to the 11/24/2020, 12/1/2020, and 1/25/2021 minutes. But I'm going to guess that people have not had time to review those. So if we're comfortable with just moving forward with the December 8th minutes and then looking over those minutes for our next meeting, I think that that's great. If people feel comfortable and they've reviewed all of the minutes, we can motion to add those as well. But for now, for the agenda, we're just considering the December 8th minutes. So I'll entertain any motions.
A motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you. So there's a motion by Cody to approve the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, second by David. And then I am just going to ask in this scenario if there is anyone against approving the minutes. All right, seeing none, I am going to say that those are approved and keep us moving on along. So the next item is approval of the spring 2021 meeting schedule. So I'm quickly pulling that up right now. So we'll have 7 meetings, the first one being today, then there's March 2nd, March 16th, April 6th, April 20th, and May 4th, and then there's also May 11th, which will be the organizational meeting for the next university assembly to come in. So that's staying in line with the first and third Tuesday of each month, and then the organizational meeting in May, which has been the traditional schedule for the university assembly. So I personally think it works out pretty well, and it keeps us on good balance, and we're not meeting weekly or too far apart. So I am strongly in favor. And if there are any issues, I would love to talk about them. And if not, if there's a motion to approve that schedule so that we can officially get it on the board for the Office of the Assemblies, that would be great also.
I'll move to approve.
Thanks, Jessica. So we have a motion to approve. Brandon, I see your hand up.
I'll second.
Brandon seconding. Is there any discussion about the timeline? All right, seeing none, if you're all comfortable, I'm once again just going to ask for a vote if there is any dissent to let me know or let us all know. Okay, seeing none, that is approved, and we now officially have a schedule. So thank you, everyone. And I'm sorry, Gina, that it took so long. But COVID has delayed a lot of things. So thank you all for bearing with us. And this will be a good semester, and I'm excited. So next, we're going to turn to Resolution 7. And that is review of Cornell admission standards. The sponsor is Bennett. I see Jacob's hand up. So Jacob, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I'm just motioning to potentially move that back because Bennett is on his way. He's just coming from something real quick. So he'll be here shortly.
Sure. So Jacob, could you do a more specific where you would want to move it in the agenda to the end of the business of the day, like after Resolution 9 or before then?
Absolutely. Let's do it at the end of business of the day. So directly preceding or succeeding Resolution 9.
All right. Thank you for your motion. Is there a second to moving this resolution to the end of our business of the day items? Seconded by Brandon. And then I'm going to stick to this. Is there anyone that is opposed to this? Seeing none, I'm just going to move along if it's all right with you all. If there's something that's not controversial, I think it's easy enough just to quickly move us without a tally vote. But when we're voting on more specific things, I will absolutely not do that. So the next one is Resolution 8. Which has been greatly revised, and it's now expressing gratitude from the UA to each individual that helped in the new student code of conduct process. I'm going to ask that Uche take the floor if he can as chair so that I can present this quickly and the changes that were made.
For sure. Go ahead.
Thank you. All right. So everyone, originally this was talking more about things that as a body we had seen, we were thanking individuals for their help, but we were also acknowledging things that we as a body agreed with and things that we disagreed with. So I used track changes on purpose to show what I was taking out. I took out a lot of our opinions. And right now, it's really a resolution that is just looking into all of the individuals that have helped throughout the past couple of years, holding town halls, the CJC, other constituent groups, the Office of the University Council, and really just thanking everyone for everything that they did. So it's pretty straightforward. It just says that we want to extend gratitude to every single person. So I am happy to answer any questions about the changes that I made.
Okay, seeing that there are no questions, I would look favorably upon a motion to vote on this resolution.
Motion to vote.
Seconded.
Okay, just put your votes in the chat. It's the yes button now, right?
Okay. You can actually, yeah, you, there you go. Huh?
Okay. I think it was 11. Yeah.
I think we lost Uche.
Okay. I'm going to reclaim chairship if that's okay, since it's passed and we lost Uche. It looks like Charlie voted after the fact also, as well as Pilar and Caroline. So that is 11, 12, 13, 14 in favor. 15 with David now. And then I didn't see any no's. And then if there are abstentions, if you could press yes now, that would be grand.
Excuse me, Logan, if you could also just call for any no's.
Absolutely. Yeah, if there are any no's, can you please press the no button? Thanks, Gina. And then if you're abstaining, please press the yes button. Okay, so it looks like just me. And then Charlie, now I have you down as a yes and also an abstention. So can I quickly just ask for clarification on which one?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, so Casey, do you have the total on that by any chance? It looks like 15 yeses and one abstention.
That's what I have currently.
Okay, so that passes. It looks like the yes function might not be the best method, since some people are going in the chat. To quickly try to alleviate that for people who don't have the yes button, would you feel comfortable doing like a thumbs up or a raise hand while voting, or do you want to stick to inside the chat bubble? And anyone who voted in the chat, please feel free to speak out. Brandon.
I just thought perhaps providing a clarification where those yeses and raising hands have moved to with the most recent version of Zoom are now in the reactions. They used to be in the participants, but now it's you should see a button at the bottom that says reactions. And they've updated those to be persistent. So until I lower my hand stays raised now. Same thing with the yeses and noes.
Thank you, Brandon. I should have clarified that. Okay. So resolution 8 has passed. I'm going to keep us moving along to resolution 9, and I'm going to open that up real quick. I'm sorry. So resolution 9 is not working from the link, unfortunately. So Jacob, if it's okay, I'm just going to give you the floor and you can give the full name of the resolution and the background. But unfortunately, I can't open the link.
Yeah, absolutely. Not sure why it's not working, but all good. I hope that you've all had the chance to see it. I will copy and paste my current working link in the chat. So if anyone wants to have a look at it, hopefully it should work through there. So this resolution, Resolution 9, officially titled Resolution to Rename Goldwyn Smith Hall in order to foster an increasingly inclusive campus environment. So myself and Bennett have both sponsored this resolution in order to create a more inclusive campus environment from the very core of the infrastructure of the university, transcending just the name on the building, but also to the conscience of the students and the faculty that work here. As I'm sure you all know, the Board of Trustees recently took Goldwyn Smith's name off of professorship titles. And I can read a short excerpt from the Vice President of University Relations, Melina, who had issued a statement on the 14th of December this past year, 2020, and had written, and I quote, "Smith authored many bigoted essays that put forth anti-Semitic, anti-feminist, anti-suffrage, and anti-co-education views that are the antithesis to the inclusive community that lives." Oh, I apologize. My screen switch that lived values that are the values that Cornell is rightfully proud of and continually strives for today. And I would agree, but I think that Vice President Molina happened to have left out some very important quotes that I hope you don't mind me sharing real quick. Some key examples and excerpts of Goldwyn Smith's history. First of all, he was considered to be a founder, and I'm sure, and I know that that is why his name is on the building. However, he was only a professor at Cornell for a very short amount of time. In fact, he was from England, originally studied at Oxford, and was a famous professor there. However, while at Cornell, he made some observations that are particularly troubling, or perhaps how I perceived them were particularly troubling, specifically as they related to women and female students at Cornell's campuses. I'm sure you all know Cornell has a very good history, in fact, of including women as students from early on in its educational history, unlike many other universities across the country. However, Goldwyn Smith had remarked that seeing a woman riding a bicycle in Ithaca, he thought was not right, was a demonstration of the lack of control that men had over women in society. Furthermore, he said that if the university would agree to admit women, we would fall to the educational ranking of a high school, as he had put it, and he referenced Oberlin College as the comparison, as a low-ranking university, clearly demonstrating his complete lack of respect for females in education, and female professionals. I'd also like to point out his anti-Semitic past. He was often characterized, as a matter of fact, this was a quote, he was the most vehement anti-Semite in the New World when he was studying here at Cornell, and he penned quite a few articles and essays where he described Jewish people as preoccupied with money-making and therefore, as he put it, were the existential threat to humanity. Given the vast diversity on campus, of course we can strive for better, but how are we going to ever reach better if we are continuing to honor individuals who held this sort of viewpoint? Now, as the home of the College of Arts and Sciences, I don't believe that someone who held these sorts of views should be represented, should be honored as the home of our humanities students, our fantastic professors, and our employees. This is not a building that should commemorate bigotry or hatred. Rather, we should be seeking to foster an inclusive environment and make our campus reflective of the people and the individuals who we strive to produce for the students, to serve as an inspiration for students every single day. How can Goldwyn Smith's name serve as an inspiration to any student or any faculty of any shred of moral character? So I ask you to sincerely consider this decision, not only for myself as a Jewish person, as a descendant of Holocaust survivors, not for my female colleagues here or peers on campus, but for every single person who has any sort of morality and who believes in justice and inclusion, not this warped perspective that Goldwin Smith had peddled as a member of faculty here and as a so-called founder of the university. With that, I'm going to step down if anyone else wants to speak. Bennett?
Yeah, I'm just going to quickly second everything that Jacob put forward. I know that there are a bunch of people in the chat going and asking about who this could potentially be renamed in honor of. I do like Bob's example of potentially RBG or recognizing the original people who lived on this land. Additionally, names that I would consider throwing out would be Mae Jemison. She was the first African-American woman to travel to space. And there are more on that I'm trying to think of, but I'm spacing on now. But the resolution in itself doesn't specify who this will be named after. That is up for later discussion, or we could amend it into the resolution if we feel like the body can come to some kind of collective consensus on that one.
All right. Thank you so much, Jacob and Bennett, for your presentation. Also, Jacob, I'm really sorry that by screen sharing that I changed your presentation method. I was trying to dabble in screen sharing. I'm opening up the floor. Brandon has his hand up, and then I'll go back to you, Jacob, if you want to talk, and then David, and then Jessica.
Thank you. Thank you, Logan. And thank you, Bennett and Jacob. I am so pleased to see this motion on the floor. I was actually at the dedication of Klarman Hall when Mr. Klarman spoke about the hesitancy that he had and the family had about attaching their building, acknowledging his own Jewish faith and the concern about being attached to this building of such a vehement anti-Semite. And I will paraphrase my perception of what he said. He felt as if it was a kind of a middle finger to that idea to now be able to have this building named after him so close to him. And I would venture to say that he would be very proud to see students looking to make a change, a positive change in the naming of buildings here at Cornell's campus. So I really applaud this motion and appreciate you taking the time and energy to put this forward to folks, because many people don't even realize it, don't even know the history behind it. So thank you very much.
Jacob?
Absolutely. I appreciate that. I appreciate the kind words, Brandon, and I'm glad for that insight. I did not know that. And so I'm glad, and it makes me smile to know that now, but hopefully we can get the name removed for good. I just did want to mention the reason I had not included a specific recommendation for a name is I think that more work needs to go into deciding who we put on buildings, and I think that's a key factor here. Now, of course, there are cultural changes that take place as to what is not acceptable. You know, you go back to the 1930s, I might have been accepted here at Cornell, but certainly not at a school like Harvard or Yale as a Jewish person. So, of course, there are cultural changes, but that should not hold us back from recognizing justice in our time and rewriting the wrongs of the past. And so I hope that we can perhaps write another resolution in the future if we decide to proceed with this one, where we can create possibly a committee to look into future names. But I hope that doesn't hold anybody necessarily back from voting for this today.
David?
Hi. So, yeah, I have a question about the wording of this resolution. So when you say that Cornell must remove the name, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean the official name of the building, or does that include any reference to Goldwin Smith, which may exist on the building itself? Because there are four places in the building that reference Goldwin Smith. There's the plaque on the outside, right? There are the two historical plaques, which are in the port entranceways, which one in Latin, one in English, dedicating the building to him. And then there's another plaque in the main hallway, which has a quote of Goldwin Smith. Does this resolution also demand the removal of those references, or is this mostly about how we refer to Goldwin Smith in terms of our official correspondence and our official communications from the university? If anyone wants to answer that, who's the sponsor? But I mean, I just want to put that out there because that's not clear from the wording of the resolution.
Yeah, I can answer that real quick. It is left purposely broad. I did want to inquire as to your, everyone here's judgment as to what we do regarding that. I think that it's important that we don't simply forget his past and the past of the university and some darker points in our university's history. But I certainly feel that his name and quotes should not be allowed because that would be, you know, illogical, to say the least, to have a quote from him that is supposed to be inspiring when his past is anything but. So perhaps we can put some sort of a plaque saying that, you know, this is the site of former Goldwin Smith Hall and explain as to why, give a little bit of the background and the history as to why the name was removed to serve as a reminder. But I would be interested in hearing what other folks have to say.
Jessica.
So I like this resolution. I approve. I would vote for it if we get to that point. But I was curious, I was thinking about the Native American and Indigenous students' opposition to naming one of the new residence halls after Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And so I wondered if you had any, if you'd considered recommending a comprehensive review of named buildings or named spaces. Just curious about that.
Absolutely. I mean, personally for me, I feel that naming a residence hall after Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a disrespect to the fantastic work and the dedication to our country and justice that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had performed. I think that she ought to, as having graduated the College of Arts and Sciences, be recognized as and as the only Supreme Court justice from our university, an undergraduate from our university, to have a serious academic building named after her. I think that, you know, it's fantastic to name residence halls after influential people, but I think that the prominence and the place in history with which Ruth Bader Ginsburg resides and holds perhaps deserves more than simply a residence hall. So I'd be very, you know, very interested in that. And we can work together, Jessica, if you'd like to perhaps start some sort of an ad hoc committee or a body to look into the process of naming buildings and what goes into that from the administrative standpoint.
I think that's a great idea. If moving forward, we do create an ad hoc committee like that, I think it's important to look into where names are coming from. Tom, you're up next on the list.
The resolution sort of addresses this, but I just wanted to bring up the fact that I learned when I was chair of my department years ago and tried to get the biotechnology building named after Barbara McClintock, that in the naming of buildings, the primary concern at the university is getting somebody to donate the money. In fact, Klarman Hall is an example of that. And the resolution specifically says it should be named for an influential scholar, somebody like that. But I was just wondering if you want to state explicitly that this shouldn't be a fund name. I mean, you don't want to call Trump Hall. Well, they wouldn't do that. But who knows who might donate the money to try to get their name on this very, very central Arts Quad building. And the university might not be able to resist the temptation to cash in here. So I don't know that it's a good idea to expressly state that we don't think this should be used as strictly a fundraising opportunity, but there's going to be, that point is going to come up. That's my contribution.
Thank you, Tom. I think that's a really important point. Jacob or Bennett, do you want to respond or just acknowledge that?
Yeah, I can acknowledge that. I think that's a great idea and a great point, something I would be willing to work on into the resolution. I will say that I know the Board of Trustees has already voted on whether or not they wanted to rename Goldwin Smith Hall. They voted when they renamed the Goldwin Smith faculty positions. And their main reason for rejecting renaming the building was, I'm almost positive it was fiduciary. They did not want to invest that kind of money or that kind of time into this assignment at the current moment. So I think that by passing a resolution now with this body and potentially the SA and other governing organizations, that might provide the added weight needed to get this through the Board of Trustees. But I do think because they were worried about financing in their original meeting, it should definitely be referenced in the resolution and something that I think we definitely should exclude donations from being people who donate simply to be in contention for the name of this building.
Bob?
Yes, thank you, Jacob and Bennett, for bringing this to our attention. I think it's a really critical thing. And I would suggest two ways forward. I think we should have an ad hoc committee that discusses in general how we name buildings in the future broadly. But I also think that we should push ahead faster in the renaming of this particular building. If we just simply say it shouldn't be Goldwin Smith, and I agree with that totally, and yet don't suggest an alternative quickly, then there's kind of a vacuum and it isn't going to, they're not going to have an unnamed building, right? And I think Tom is right that, we don't want to have the university use as a fundraising opportunity. It's an awkward fundraising opportunity because the building's there. The reason that everyone thinks it should be renamed is because we're recognizing that it was poorly named in the first place. And, my sense of Cornell politics is that if we just pass a resolution saying it should be renamed, but not saying what, things go slowly. And, the spring semester is a difficult time to get things done and the trustees are preoccupied and et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to come up again next fall and not be decided. I think if we say it should be renamed and we give them a really strong, positive alternative, they'll grasp on it. And we got divestment from fossil fuels to the university trustees last spring precisely that way. They moved quickly in the spring because they just wanted to move on and do something. So I suggest that we add specifically that we think that this should be named after Justice Ginsburg. I mean, what a fitting attribute to an amazing woman who's an ANS graduate. So that would be my advice. And that we also undertake the longer term view of how do we name buildings in general, and can we break it away? It isn't just a fundraising thing, right? We need to care about the names the buildings carry. But thank you for bringing it to our attention.
Thank you, Bob. Do Jacob or Bennett want to respond before I call on Valerie?
So quickly, I do just want to say that I agree that we should be moving forward with a strong proposal for a name. As it was mentioned earlier, I do just want to call back to there being some apprehension amongst Indigenous students about putting RBG's name on a building or on an academic building, specifically because of some of the votes that she cast with regards to Native restitution. That doesn't mean that I think she should be disqualified from this position or from having this honor put forward in her name. I will just simply throw out the idea that the Campus Welfare Committee is meeting on Friday. I feel like this perfectly falls within our purview. And so that meeting will be open to anyone, and we could do some kind of vote within the Welfare Committee to put forward a name to the rest of the group. That's very much something that I, as chair of that committee, would be willing to spend time on. So if people want to come, if that's how we want to go about doing this, if you want to come to the welfare meeting on Friday, we can have the debate as to who we put forward with the name then.
Thanks, Bennett. Valerie, the floor is yours.
So I think absolutely we need an ad hoc committee to talk about how buildings are named. But I do think, you know, we would lose an opportunity to get some involvement from students, you know, students of the Arts and Science College. And their opinions really should weigh in on this. After all, they're the ones that use the building, and it is their quad. It is their college. So while I think, and I, you know, I like Justice Ginsburg, and I think it would be a good addition, I think it would be also helpful if we had maybe four or five names, and that get some feedback from the student body about who they think is the appropriate name to go on that building. You know, at the end of the day, if we call ourselves being doing shared governance, we really need to take into account all the people who will be influenced by whoever that person is. Just some thoughts.
Thank you, Valerie. I think what you said is very similar. I was going to propose, I think having a group of like 3 to 5 names would be really important, and to bring this especially to the arts and sciences school in general, and not just coming straight out of the UA. Jacob, is your hand up in response? Then I'm gonna give you the floor before Brandon, if that's all right with you, Brandon.
Yeah, very briefly, I definitely agree with what Valerie had mentioned. As a matter of fact, I messaged Bennett on here something very similar as you had begun. I think it's really important that the 20 of us simply do not decide, or say a handful of folks on a committee decide. I think that this is something where the broader community really needs to have an active voice in making sure that they can be heard.
Okay, so Brandon, the floor is yours, and then Charlie.
Yeah, I think there's some important topics brought up here around removal of the monetary attributes to naming of buildings here, and that we as the University Assembly should acknowledge that in putting forth this recommendation, it is one in which we ask the university not to seek further financial gain from the renaming of this, but instead to perhaps look to create an ad hoc committee consisting of members of the arts and sciences community, as well as, you know, deans and faculty and whomever you could perhaps lay that out. So that may be something to look at. I would say for me personally, like just putting forth a renamement piece, I think there's an importance that I believe Bob spoke to about saying, yes, we want you to rename it, and here's how we as the University Assembly would advise that you move forward with renaming, to give them hand to something to the president, which can go to the trustees to say, and this is how it might go about, would be a little more powerful, in my opinion.
Charlie?
Yeah, so I like the idea of an ad hoc committee. I like the idea of concrete names, but I would caution against boxing the trustees in. For example, suppose Professor Fox said, here's $100 million, put my name on the building, but I want you to endow 100 full scholarships for Native Americans. I think there are moral dilemmas in this venue, and I think we should not deny that. And I think, but again, I think suggesting concrete names, but it's not so simple to say we don't want the financial side to be absent from the decision, because you don't know what that is. It could be something extremely positive. Right. Just throwing it out there.
All right. Thank you, everyone. In the interest of time and seeing no more hands up, I'm going to suggest that we either add additional language to say that we plan on forming an ad hoc committee and consulting the greater Cornell community to the current resolution, and then voting on that resolution today, or tabling the resolution and letting Bennett talk to his committee, and then coming back to it in 2 weeks. I tend to think the first one may move us along a little bit faster. So I'm in favor of proposing language, but that's going to be the call of the body. And David, the floor is yours.
I was just going to say there's another option, which is that we refer this resolution to the Campus Welfare Committee, since it seems like there's interest for having them consider it and they're meeting soon, and we don't have an ad hoc committee or anything ready now, and that might be another option. Yeah.
Brandon.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to refer this to the Campus Welfare Committee. I believe, as David said, I think that's the next step to be able to get some of these this verbiage adjusted and identify what the goals there are. So my motion is to refer this to the Campus Welfare Committee for revision to return to the University Assembly.
Second that.
I second.
Okay. So is there any discussion on the motion on the floor, which would be to bring this resolution to the Campus Welfare Committee, and then after deliberation, it will come back to the University Assembly? Brandon, I see your hand up. Not anymore. Okay. I am going to then call for the vote. So all in favor, please press the yes button. Okay, I've got 16 yeses. If you're opposed, please press the no button. So no no's. And then if you would like to abstain, please press the yes button. Okay, and then it looks like that passes. I wanna say, unless Casey, I'm wrong, I think it was 16-0-1. Okay, thank you. All right, so moving on, I think that we're going back. Yeah, that was the last thing. So we're going to go back to resolution 7 right now. So I'm going to pull that up and also give Bennett the floor.
Yeah, of course. Sorry, I wasn't able to hop on at the very beginning of the call to get this done sooner. Resolution 7 is the creation of a review committee to discuss Cornell's admissions practices. So just a brief run through of the facts that I've brought up within the resolution. Only 3.8% of Cornell students come from the bottom 20% of family income brackets. Or 20% of family incomes, as opposed to 64% who come from the top 20. 16% of Cornellians of Cornell graduates moved up two or more income quartiles. That may sound fine, but that is amongst the lowest in the state of New York. And nationally, in 2020, Cornell ranked 1,303rd in terms of social mobility out of all colleges and universities in the United States. And that was actually an increase from their 2019 ranking of 1,336, with the percent of low-income students at Cornell University at 8.5%. That is the fifth lowest in the state of New York. The average amount of debt at Cornell in 2020 is about $14,000, potentially more. So this resolution is simply put out to create a group of all of the community members as to whether or not we want to amend this to make it an ad hoc committee or something of that sort. I'm open to it, but this is just the creation of a committee of all community members with audit power over admissions practices to be able to go in and see why this is and what are different ways that we can go about creating socioeconomic diversity on campus. I think it's important to note that even Provost Michael Kotlikoff acknowledged that the undergraduate population is, quote, not socioeconomically diverse. So there's definitely a problem here. I don't, at the moment, know how to fix this problem, which is why I'm trying to create a committee to get those answers. So that's what this resolution is trying to do.
All right. Thank you so much, Bennett, for the presentation and for the very clearly worded resolution. I'm going to open the floor up for any comments or questions. Brandon?
Bennett, I really appreciate this. I've heard Provost Kotlikoff actually speak to the socioeconomic diversity. In fact, you know, asking a group of people if they what they thought the socioeconomic diversity was in a room, and you know, the vast majority of people were completely wrong, and you know, thought it was much different than what it currently is. I guess the question I would have though is sort of understanding what processes and procedures are in place now for assessing the admissions practices as it pertains to that socioeconomic diversity. And if in essence, we are just asking the university to do what is already being done, I just am not clear on that personally.
I haven't been made aware of undergraduates who have access to admissions protocol and admissions decisions and sort of a way into the room. So in that regard, simply having undergraduates there to be able to go and perform that audit would be something that I don't think is currently done. As to whether or not graduate students, staff, and faculty can also perform those audits or have the ability to look into our admissions practices, I'm not sure if that's something that's attainable. But this is also I also call for this report to be made public. And I'm not aware of any current public in-depth analyses of our admissions practices.
I'm going to quickly, for you, Bennett, if you saw in the chat before I call on Caroline, Robert Platt asked, is not the Office of Institutional Studies doing this type of analysis? So just to ask you whether you had any knowledge on that information.
I can look into that and get back to you. That was Bob Platt. Yeah, I can look into that and get back to you. My understanding through talking with FGSU is that that is not happening, but I can go back and make 100% certain.
And then, Bob, if I could quickly ask you, do you know if there is an analysis ongoing at the moment? Or
I don't know about ongoing at the moment, but I know they have in the past done statistical work on the economic advantage, disadvantage composition of the Cornell classes.
Okay, thank you. That's a really important point to bring up. And then I'm going to give the floor to Caroline and then Charlie.
Thanks. Yeah, so one of the strange things about Cornell is that admissions is decentered. Each college does its own admissions. And I know Arts and Sciences is very publishes the results, the economic disparities, and I'm pretty sure the other colleges do too. I want to express an anxiety, which comes from an experience I had on a committee to try to protect diversity in admissions. There's a series of lawsuits going on, brought by a particular lawyer and plaintiffs he finds to try to get race as a category out of admissions across all of the top tier institutions. And one of our justifications is that we do a whole picture of admissions. That is, we take lots of things into account. We don't count one thing. We count we look at a whole picture of a person. So it's not about an SAT score or a particular qualification. And I just want to say that it's a great idea to have students aware of and engaged in this kind of holistic admissions process, but there may be some dangers in having public scrutiny that are the unintended consequences of having lawsuits against us. I think it's incredibly important that we have racial diversity on this campus, and the pressure is not to, the legal pressure is not to. So, and the university's been worried about a lawsuit for a long time on that ground. So I just, you know, it makes me nervous. So I think maybe rather than having a public audit, asking each of the colleges for an account of how they think about economic diversity and admissions and what their numbers are and how those numbers compare would be a first step in making sure that students have access to that. But rather than saying, you know, let's now have a, you know, anyway, I've said enough. I do think there's a danger lurking here that that makes me anxious.
Yeah, of course. And thank you for bringing that up. I do hear the concern about sort of putting that kind of information out there, although I will just say it becomes a balancing act of accountability as well as the potential legal ramifications thereof. I personally think that the only goal of this committee is simply to identify areas where our admissions practices may not be up to par and issuing some kind of recommendation thereof. I don't expect the committee to release a full report of every possible outlier that or every possible factor that could go into admissions, simply identifying areas where our admissions teams may be struggling. If that helps at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Caroline, Gina also brought my attention to part of the University Assembly Charter. Gina, would you be comfortable sharing what you found?
Sure. I was just referencing the UA has the authority to ask the administration to provide information. And perhaps there's information that could be provided that could help make the case or strengthen the case or inform the position that you have. And I'll put that in the chat.
Thank you so much, Gina. So Charlie and then Jacob.
Yeah, I just want to give a heads up with some developments that sprung out of the Faculty Senate. So as was mentioned, the colleges are in charge of their own admissions. But the admissions officers from each college get together every other week with the vice provost for enrollments. Anyway, over the years, the faculty have kind of lamented that the presence of faculty in the admissions process has gradually decreased over the years. There used to be a very heavy-handed kind of committee that met with the admissions officers and so on. So anyway, here's what the new development is. So we are now have a four-person faculty advisory group that's going to sit in on these meetings twice a semester that are staged amongst all the admissions officers. We're in the process of picking faculty for that. We want to get somebody from a large college, someone from a small college, someone from a contract college, and explicitly somebody who's well-versed in first-gen issues associated with admissions. So the idea is not quite aligned with this, although it certainly comes up. It's more like questions like role of standardized tests, how do you set up the essay, how do you advise students about what college is the most appropriate. In a nutshell, we have the potential here for a really nice low overhead mechanism for having the faculty involved in policy decisions that relate to admissions. It was brought up here about statistics, how important it is to have statistics. There's a lot of confidentiality about that. On the other hand, so one of the issues here is to actually share as much data as you can because you want your decisions to be informed by data. So anyway, that's just kind of a heads up that the faculty at least are concerned about the admissions process. And we have a restoration of the way things used to be, which is to say that faculty were much involved. I should say that ours was the last sort of, AAP is very special because they have a very special admissions process with portfolios and so on. But in general, ours was sort of the last college where faculty actually read freshman folders. And I did that myself about 15 or 20 years ago, and it was a really profound experience. You would spend like 3 hours reading with it. A professional admissions officer, the one I worked with was sort of the Washington, D.C. area, and it was really illuminating, and I was saying for my own sake. And so we want to be able to pay attention. It's extremely important just to pay attention, and we have a mechanism now with the fact they can pay greater attention. So I'm in favor of anything here that enlightens the whole community about admissions. Our whole undergraduate teaching life is determined by admissions. So it's very natural that we pay attention, express ourselves in that venue. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Charlie. And in the interest of time, just because we do still have two more resolutions, I'm just going to ask Jacob if you could be quick so that we can try to get everything along through the agenda.
Yeah. So to keep it very, very short, I agree wholeheartedly with the sentiment that Bennett had presented in this resolution. The only thing that perhaps makes me a little nervous is that publishing these numbers will actually dissuade folks from low-income communities from applying to Cornell, because if they see that the average admitted student comes from a very wealthy background, they may be very reluctant to apply, and understandably so. So I think it's more, I think we should focus more on how do we make it so that, first of all, student life is more affordable and more attainable for families and students of all socioeconomic backgrounds, but also how we make the application process essentially ergonomically more applicable to those low-income students, where they can have access to all the resources potentially that they would need, and they wouldn't be slighted or disadvantaged. Of course, this is perhaps unrealistic, but I think that we should be striving to limit that advantage as strongly as possible, to give every student, regardless of the wealth of their parents, the easiest opportunity to apply.
Bennett?
Yeah, just to quickly respond to that, I do hear the concern there. I will just say that the statistics and everything that we keep referencing and the things that I put in the resolution, that's already out there and that's already public knowledge. If that's going to be dissuading potential applicants, it's dissuading potential applicants already. That being said, I don't think the breadth of this committee is just going to look at statistics and just going to look at, like, what is the average income of the admitted student, and then make decisions based off of that. I foresee this more so as looking at admissions policy. We already understand that Cornell's economic diversity needs to be increased. Like, the committee doesn't need to prove that. The statistics and the facts are all there. So I much more foresee this as a look into practices and policy that and recommendations thereof than simply saying, like, this is the state of Cornell admissions.
Thank you, Bennett. So with that, I'm going to recommend this is, I believe, within the purview of the UA to vote through as a resolution. So I'm going to recommend that either we have a motion to vote on this resolution, to table the resolution, to send it to an applicable committee, or et cetera, but to keep moving along today, please. Brandon.
Yeah, I think there's some additional research to be done here as far as what is current practices and review of current models that are being done. And for that reason, I would like to make a motion to table this that's my motion.
Brandon, if you could be a little more specific, table until the next meeting or table indefinitely?
I'll go with table until the next meeting and we'll defer to Bennett if that's feasible.
Okay. So there's a motion on the floor to table this until our next meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, seconded by Lucas. Any discussion? All right, seeing none, I'm going to ask all that vote in favor of tabling until the next meeting to vote yes, please. Okay, and all those opposed, please vote no. So I believe the total count on that is, and actually I'm going to call, I'm sorry, if you're abstaining, please press yes. Okay, so I've got three abstentions. So it looks like that was 13-0-3. So that is going to be tabled until our next meeting. All right, so I am going to move us along to new business. If we could try to keep both of these to 5 to 6 minutes each, and if not, table them, I think that that's the right way to go about it. I'm going to share my screen for resolution 11. Give me 1 second. Okay. So resolution 11 is regarding emergency appointments to the University Hearing Board and University Review Board members for the remainder of this academic year. So the former executive committee of the UA acted on an emergency basis to appoint students and members of the faculty to serve for the fall term. And for the faculty, it was to serve until May 31st, 2021. So this is proposing that the following students listed on the resolution, three students being excluded due to conflicts of interest, be appointed through May 31st, 2021, and that the Codes and Judicial Committee is then being asked to consider either extending the periods of the appointments for the faculty members and students beyond that point, but leaving beyond May 31st, 2021 with the CJC, where I believe it belongs, and only acting on an emergency basis right now as a UA, because there are hearings that are being had right now, and there's a need for members to sit on those. So with that, I am opening questions, and I see Bob's hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Logan. Just a comment. We last summer, as the executive committee, did make these emergency appointments. I think they're fine appointments. I thought all along that the full assembly should be more engaged, but that isn't possible to do in the summer. So I'm fully in favor of extending these. It was not our intent that these weren't good appointments. It's just that the full assembly should always have been engaged. And I would say I still believe we don't have a good process for doing this long term. The CJC is obviously preoccupied last year with issues of the code revisions, et cetera. But we need a better process whereby we thoughtfully bring candidates to the UA in a timely way where the appointments aren't made on an emergency basis. In the 6 years I've been on the UA, 90% of the time the appointments are made on an emergency basis by the executive committee, and I just don't think that's right. So I favor this resolution, but I'd also like to see us do better moving forward.
Yeah, thank you so much, Bob, for that. I completely agree. And Brandon and I talked, and the next thing I was actually going to recommend was if somebody could move to add Brandon as a co-sponsor to this resolution, or I'm happy to move to add Brandon as a co-sponsor to the resolution. But I agree with you wholeheartedly that the process for UHRB appointments has been flawed and needs to be revisited and revamped. And that's why these appointments are only through the spring and they're not beyond that, because this gives the CJC the opportunity to look at these candidates and potentially look at other candidates and do their job and also figure out, I know Brandon is probably going to talk about how the CJC is going to look into the UHRB process. So I'm going to give him the floor now.
Thank you, Logan. And I wanted to speak in support of this resolution as well and agree with Bob. You know, taking on the CJC I'll be frank, I didn't know exactly what I was getting into, and had a lot to do with all the codes and everything. And this is a particular item that just never made it onto my plate officially. And so acknowledging that aspect of it. And I think moving forward in this semester, our goal here is a transition to the new code with support of the student VP of Student Campus Life and Kevin and the OJA and all the people working on that. And in conjunction with that, a clearer and defined role of how the UHRB is done, I think is really important, because at that point, then the code will be transitioning over into another area. And so it's really important that we codify our role in that University Hearing Review Board, and ensuring that we don't get into a situation where then afterwards it's like, well, it's an emergency, we got it for you, don't worry, UA and CJC, we want to make sure we have that wrapped up. So I think that the great resolution gives us time this semester to really focus on how we make that work moving forward.
Yeah, and thank you so much, Brandon. Can I quickly, since I'm still chairing the meeting, can I just ask that somebody move to add Brandon as a co-sponsor to this resolution?
So moved.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
All right, second by Bennett, and I'm going to go by unanimous consent. So if you have an objection, please press the no button.
Before the vote, can I just add that
Oh, sure.
You know, I fully support all of the code revisions we've made and the trustees have made. But overall, the UA plays a more minor role than in the past. Our major role that's left is in these appointments. And I think that's a critical role, that we make sure we get a diverse group of people on these hearing boards who are not just subservient to day hall interests, and that we as a community really do that. So I think this is one of the most important things the university assembly does. So I'm fully in support of this as an emergency basis, but I really plead that the committee take this on as a target to reconsider and how we really do it moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. And then I'm going back to just the vote to have Brandon added as a co-sponsor. I'm doing it by unanimous consent. So if there is objection, please let me know now. And seeing none, Brandon is added as a co-sponsor. And next, I'm going to recommend that we motion to approve this resolution and move forward.
I move the previous question.
Second.
All right. Any quick discussion before the vote? All right. Seeing none, I ask you to please press the yes button in favor of this resolution. Okay. I see 14 yeses, 15 now with Caroline. If you would like to vote against in opposition, please press the no button. And if you would like to abstain, please press yes. So two abstentions. All right, so this is moving forward, and thank you everyone. Thank you especially Bob for speaking out about this process, and I hope to see it changed, and I have full faith with the CJC this semester that the UHRB process is going to go smoothly. And I'm looking forward to it. So I'm going to move on to resolution 12, requiring all on-campus flags to be flown at half staff in honor of those lost to COVID-19. And I'm gonna share the screen, Jacob, before, and you can have the floor, but I don't wanna throw you off again.
You're fine, don't worry. Should be good. Hold on. Yeah, there we go. All right, perfect. Very short resolution here, only one page. Essentially, I was driving around campus these past week and a half or so, and I noticed that the flags remain at their normal height. I think that it would be out of respect to follow in line with state regulations, according to the governor. To adopt a half-staff status until the conclusion of the COVID practices on campus. just simply in honor of the victims who have been lost. And this includes American flags and other flags that are currently being flown, including the Cornell University flag on Day Hall. In this resolution is the exact wording and the language that is written in the United States Code as to how flags should be treated, hoisted to a peak for an instant and then lowered to the half staff position along the actual flagpole itself.
All right, thank you so much, Jacob, for bringing this forward. Also, I am now going to open the floor for any comments or questions. Okay, seeing no comments or questions, I'm going to recommend that we take some sort of action.
Is it within our purview to vote on this today? Or do we have to wait till next session?
So I've tried looking in the bylaws and the charter, and I don't think that we have to wait. Oh, Bob can answer that.
We don't have to wait.
Thank you.
Nothing in the bylaws or charter. There's a tradition that we wait so we can get community feedback and buy-in and not do something that we'll regret, but I can't imagine why that applies in this case.
Thank you, Bob. Yeah, I'm with Bob in saying that I also don't see why this would get an adverse reaction from anyone. And yeah, it's usually just tradition that the UA waits a week, but there's nothing that says that we can't vote today.
Then I'll motion to vote.
All right, Bennett's motioning to vote. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Valerie. Any discussion before we vote? All right, seeing none, if you're in favor of this resolution, please press the yes button. All right. If you are opposed, please press the red no button. And then if you're abstaining, please press the yes button again. All right, so this passes as well. I received a message from Gina to say that it should have been moved to business of the day since it's been voted through, as long as nobody as long as there's no challenge to it. It is technically against Robert's Rules of Order, but since the chair allowed it to go through, it would have to be a point of order to be rescinded. So I am going to say that this passed unanimously. And thank you, Jacob, for all of the resolutions and hard work. Same to Bennett. There were a lot of resolutions today. And I'm appreciative of everyone. We have 15 minutes. The next thing is committee updates. I'm going to ask Uche to report on the executive committee. Okay. Pilar, would you be okay with giving a short update on our last meeting? I can also.
Let me pull up the last agenda.
If it's all right, I'm going to move exec to the end and ask for the Campus Infrastructure Committee to give its report.
All right. Glad to start a second semester, the Campus Infrastructure Committee. I did not want to inundate anyone with emails over the past week or so, because I know that our inboxes have all been flooded. So I didn't want anyone to miss anything. I'm looking to have our first meeting next week sometime, mid next week, and I'm looking to hold meetings on the weeks opposite from when we hold UA meetings, just to make sure that everyone's weeks are spaced out well. And so you should all be receiving an email from me tonight or tomorrow morning, depending on what time it is that I send it out. Got a lot of bills to go through, resolutions rather. So I'm excited.
Thank you, Jacob. And then we're going to go to campus welfare.
So I sent out the vote email for our schedules this past weekend, gave the committee about a 5-day period to vote on that. Unfortunately, I did not get a lot of votes back on that. So I talked to members of the Office of the Assembly, and they said I could just institute executive authority with regards to the schedule and move forward. So we are moving forward with Friday at 4:30, this coming Friday at 4:30. As our meeting time, and we will be discussing the Goldwyn Smith Hall rename.
All right, thank you so much, Bennett. If it's okay with you guys, I'm gonna go through the reports and then ask if there's any questions, just because we're running out of time. So I'm gonna go to the Codes and Judicial Committee.
Yeah, so we have our first meeting is actually this Friday, so I don't have anything to update at this time.
And then I'm going to circle back to exec.
Thanks. Sorry, guys. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anything that we possibly had in the discussion, so I wanted to pull up the actual agenda. The executive group had not met too often. Actually, we'd all had some of these ad hoc meetings, but we did meet last week, and we'll then fall back down to our regularly every other Tuesday prior to a meeting as we progress. During the meeting on February 9th, we did finalize and solidify the 2021 spring schedule, as you all saw and presented at this meeting. We also then discussed possible initiatives, resolutions, some of them obviously that were brought forward today, well, quite a few, as well as one specific that wasn't necessarily brought up was towards policing, police disarmament. We discussed the recent survey that was sent out to the broader community, specific to the engagement with campus police as one of the possible topics of interest for us. We also then discussed guest invitations and or other presentations we may want. The Scorton Center, student campus life were raised as options as well. And other than that was pretty much what we really kind of focused on, unless there was anything else that I missed, Tom, Logan.
Thank you, everybody. And I also wanted to quickly talk about vacancies. We have one vacancy on the CJC, and I think we also have a vacancy on the CWC. Bennett, if you could just quickly let me know if that's accurate.
It was filled during this meeting.
It was filled during this meeting. Okay, cool. So there's a vacancy right now for a UA slot on the CJC. So if anybody's interested, please email Pilar. And besides that, if anybody has any questions for committee chairs or committee members, now's a good time. And if not, we're going to move on to our constituent reports. Okay, so seeing none, I just want to thank everyone who is chairing and on committees for all the work you guys do. It's really appreciated, and it's a lot of volunteer work, and I know how it feels, and your work is very much important to shared governance and the UA, and you're just very, very much appreciated, so thank you. I see for constituent group updates, I have student assembly first. Did Kat join the meeting? And if Kat didn't join the meeting, is there a member of the SA who would be comfortable giving a short update?
I can just summarize quick, I guess, what we discussed at our last meeting. We approved creating an ad hoc task force on harassment, bias, and discrimination to be housed within the Office of the Student Advocate for the Student Assembly at our last meeting, as well as allocated some funds from some of our committees to create a diversity and inclusion scholarship fund. And we also passed a resolution recommending or urging the inclusion of pronouns and phonetic name pronunciations in on the class rosters, encourage a resolution encouraging diversity in professional organizations, and then also a resolution asking that the final exam policy be extended to a 30-hour window rather than 24.
Thank you so much, Lucas. I'm going to go one by one here. Are there any questions about the work that the SI did recently? All right, seeing none, going to move to the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly. So, David, the floor is yours.
Hey, thanks, Logan. So the GPSA met twice so far this semester. However, most of our time has been trying to fill some vacancies in our committees. The biggest issue that we've had was that our Finance Commission chair had to step down over the winter break, and we've been trying to desperately to find someone who was willing to take on that responsibility so that organizations' funding didn't get disrupted. Thankfully, we did find someone, but we've been trying to deal with this problem of committee chairperson vacancies for a long time. Thankfully, we were able to pass a resolution last meeting that would amend our charter to give committee chairpersons voting rights, which is not something they already have. So if President Pollack approves that, then that would be kind of a minor incentive to help try to alleviate this problem. In addition, we've been talking a lot about a resolution on the ITAP, the International Teaching Assistance Program. There's been a lot of effort to try to abolish this program. And so a resolution was introduced criticizing the objectives of the program. Basically, it's a program whereby international students or students who come into the graduate school with kind of an international sounding name have to undergo a kind of English proficiency test. And if they don't pass it, then they have to take additional coursework. And this is not something, a sort of a test that students are aware of coming into the graduate school. So this resolution was then referred back to the executive committee, and they're going to talk with the provost about the program and including graduate students in the review of the program. And we're also increasingly talking about allocating funds from the student activity fee back to students somehow, because we haven't really been able to have a whole lot of activities or a lot of spending on activities. So we'd like to find a way to reallocate a lot of our funds either back to the Student Access Fund or to some other way to benefit students in need or as a result of the pandemic. And there's also been increasing discussion in our last meetings about the need for urging for a time to degree extension for doctoral students because of delayed research and financial burdens as a result of the pandemic. So it's likely we're likely to see some sort of action being taken on that front in our next meeting. So I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Thank you for the fruitful update. It sounds like you could have kept going too. So I'm glad to hear how much the GPSA is doing right now. Any questions for David or comments before we move on? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to give the floor to Hey Hey with the Employee Assembly.
Thanks, Logan. So we recently had our retreat where we reviewed results from the priorities poll, having staff, hundreds of staff members submit feedback in regards to what they think the staff should, the employee assembly should be focused on this year. We had some key targeted areas that we wanted to focus on, employee well-being, not just the physical health, but also the mental health, addressing issues of staff burnout, campus climate in reference to diversity, equity, and inclusion. How do we maintain the momentum that we've created in regards to the efforts made around DEI and staff retention in regards to ensuring job security, alleviating stress from lifting in order to alleviating stress from overworked departments by lifting hiring freezes, improving staff morale, creating means to recognize staff contributions, especially our essential frontline workers. So we broke out into breakout rooms, and each of the committees were able to come up with sort of steps forward in regards to addressing their priorities as it was related to their specific committees. So each of the committees has created a plan. We have reports, and I think moving forward, we're just going to continue working through partnerships with CNGs, colleague network groups, with different campus staff members, constituencies, and trying to provide, you know, conduits for discussions and, you know, exchanges with senior leadership, like these staff forums that we have. We're going to have a staff forum on community building in terms of having difficult conversations, bringing together faculty and staff panelists to discuss means to have creative conversations, especially as we think about civil discourse and campus climate. And we're also going to have a one-year staff forum with senior leadership, a look back into this year of COVID. I don't know if you all know, but for essentially about a year now, a lot of 43% of staff members have been working from home. So we're going to hopefully have a meaningful conversation with senior leadership and talk about, you know, what this past year has looked like, what the year forward looks like. And we're also planning a finance staff forum connecting with Joanne DiStefano and Paul Streeter to talk about the budget, what the budget has been, what it looks like moving forward, impacts of COVID and things that we've learned. So a lot is on the agenda for the remainder of the year. And that's my update.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to hear that all of our constituent groups are doing so much right now. So I'm really excited to hear feedback and keep up to date with what the employee assembly is doing, because that's all fantastic. Are there any questions for Hey Hey before I move on? All right, last but not least, we're going to go for the Faculty Senate with Charlie.
Yeah, so we're meeting every 2 weeks. It's pretty intense. Coming up in next week, we have a resolution from several faculty that concerns removing racial characterizations from crime alerts. So that's a pretty important development. We passed the university has a statement on the meaning of free speech and academic freedom. The last time it was looked at was 1960, so we revised that. The Senate passed the result by a wide margin, and now goes to the now is at the trustees, and we hope to see that become implemented in the March trustee meeting. We have again next week we have a presentation from a small ad hoc committee that's looking into developing a protocol when a faculty member is the target of a threatening communication, email or social media, and so on. So the important thing here is this touches lots of offices. It touches the communications office, the university council, a host of other offices. We have to figure out how do you respond to these things. We want to develop a half pager for faculty, so when these things come your way, you sort of know what to do and that the university backs you up. I'm looking forward to a Thursday visit to the SA where we're going to talk about, or I want to find out, I should say, how students think about online petitions. This is an increasingly common way of communication that, for example, I'm not talking about how petitions work within an assembly, but rather if the faculty are, say, considering something and they receive an online petition, how should we think about that? You know, for example, 2 years ago when we had a severe cold snap, we received a petition with 10,000 signatures on close the campus, okay? So I want guidance, the faculty want guidance on how to think about online petitions. So I'm very interested in how students think about that, because again, it's increasingly the way we communicate consensus and so on. So I'm looking forward to that. And that folds into a more general thing the Faculty Senate is considering, which is, in general, how is the internet affecting academic life? Of course, that's an ongoing topic. We did a little private survey of podcasts, which is a very positive dimension of internet communication. And it turns out that no one really on campus knew how many podcasts are coming from or are hosted by Cornell members of the Cornell community. We have a nice list of about 30 of them that we now have on our website. We want to think about that. What is the role of podcasts? Say you're a faculty member, you want to get your work well known. What is the role of this new venue of communication? We have to understand that better. So in general, these are important developments, and we'll be moving this forward at next week's Senate. There are other things that are incredibly important, but probably not so much to this audience. We're revising the research misconduct policy in a fundamental way. I can't emphasize how important that is. Also, we're doing things about the tenure review process. So that's the long and short of it from the Faculty Senate, and we look forward to reporting on what we come up with at the next UA meeting.
Thanks so much, Charlie. And I'm always happy at the first of all of these meetings to hear what each constituency has done over breaks and before we meet. So I'm looking forward to further updates. I'm just going to say that I will be allowed to speak and give a presentation at the March 19th meeting of the Board of Trustees. So that's something that the exec committee and we'll start discussing, and then as a greater UA, we'll discuss as well what exactly we want to bring forward to the Board of Trustees. And then since it's 6:02, I'm either going to ask for a motion to extend for open floor discussion or a motion to adjourn. Brandon.
I'm going to assume, since nobody raised their hand to extend, that nobody has any open floor discussion, to make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right, seconded by Pilar. I'm going to call for a unanimous consent. So unless there's anyone in opposition, and seeing none, the meeting is officially adjourned at 6:03.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.